This is an IG paid post. The news and editorial staff of the Financial Times had no role in its preparation.
Hello and welcome to IG's Decoding the Markets. I'm Victoria Scholar and with me on the pod today is IG's portfolio manager Oliver Smith and Victor Riccardi, who's an assistant professor of financial management at Goucher College in Baltimore, Maryland. Victor has also written a number of books about financial and investor behaviour, and today we're here to talk about investing psychology. Victor, thanks so much for joining us. Let's start with you. From your experience, what are some of the most common investing mistakes?
I would say the biases that people tend to suffer, one of the most common ones is what's known as overconfidence. So overconfident behavior results in many people overtrading, not having patience about the investments, and many times those people do not think for the long term. Another important one is people tend to be loss averse, meaning a loss on the downside feels twice as painful than making money on the upside. I mean, think about it. When people make money, they tell and brag to their friends. When they lose money, they tend not to talk about their losses. And that relates to something known as the disposition effect, in which we sell losers, or we hold on to losers too long and sell winners too quickly. So I think those are a couple of very important common biases. And then other issues are, for example, like cognitive processes, what's known as a heuristic. Heuristics are rules of thumb, such as we anchor on certain types of bad decisions versus good decisions. And that also relates to the idea of representativeness, which is the idea that we tend to make generalizations about certain things with very little information.
So obviously investors want to maximize their returns, but emotions clearly getting in the way a lot of the time. So do you think it's wrong to make a decision based on emotions? And is it possible to learn to work with our emotions but still get the most out of an investment?
I would say for the individual investor, the best way is to try to make non-disciplined investments. And then people who are portfolio managers, I think, would feel the same way. If someone is trading money, I think traders are much a different psychological personality than somebody who's really investing for the long term. So I would say for the short term, or my precise answer for people who are individual investors who are truly investing for the long term is to understand their biases, but create a non-emotional discipline strategy so they can reach their investment objectives over the long term.
So Oliver, as a portfolio manager, can you tell us a bit about some of the behavioral biases that have cropped up in your experience?
Yeah, I think one of the most important ones that most people are susceptible to is confirmation bias. And that effectively is when you seek to read news that confirms with your view on a particular market. So let's say that you're just doing something like looking to buy a flat. When you're looking to buy a flat, you will naturally gravitate towards newspaper headlines that say the market is going up and therefore you're very sensible to get in. And when you're looking to sell one, you'll be looking for confirmationary bias that says the market's going to fall. And it can be very, very difficult to get that balanced opinion. And I think really confirmation bias is very dangerous. And possibly the other one that people have is they place too much weight on what's happening in the short term. So if markets are going up, everyone's quite bullish. The way you fill out your application forms, if you want to open a managed portfolio, says you can take on more risk than maybe you should. And similarly, if the market's falling, you think the market will continue to fall, and therefore your risk tolerance will be much less. So those short-term market moves can have very big impacts on your long-term asset allocations.
So how difficult is it actually to control these behavioural biases? Because we are only human. You know, is it possible to get to grips with them and really, you know, invest despite these in the best ways?
The answer is people are susceptible to all sorts of behavioural biases, but really the best way to do it is to be a bit more systematic in the way you invest. So rather than being a short-term speculator on asset classes and on short-term price moves, you want to be a long-term investor. And we know full well that people really dislike making losses. I think it hurts about twice as much making a loss as the pleasure you get from making a gain. But if you can take a medium-term view, then short-term losses don't matter as much.
So, Victor, I think that leads us into planning. You know, when it comes to managing the psychological side of investing, how critical do you think it is to stick to a formula plan?
I think it's very important. But also, when you're thinking about structuring financial goals, we have a tendency, the research shows, to suffer from self-control bias. So the neural part of our brain really makes us want to be consumers. So, for example, if you tell somebody you're going to save, you're going to have an annuity product, for example, that's going to give you equal payments in retirement of $2,000 each, you tell somebody income, typically most people, maybe 25% of people, take that investment. What's very powerful to help people to reach their financial goals is to frame the decision around something they're interested in, or really a spending behavior. So if you tell somebody you're going to have $2,000 a month that will allow you to maybe take an extra two cruises a year to go on vacation in retirement, those people are more likely to delay their spending today and at the same time reach their financial goal in the future. So it's very important to essentially frame the discussion around making that investment goal, but tie a spending piece to it, and people are more likely to reach their goal as part of a financial plan.
Now, Oliver, I wanted to switch focus a bit now. Something else that's key to investing psychology is portfolio rebalancing. So can you just give us some insight into what it is and why it's important?
Yeah, so the point of portfolio rebalancing is simply to strip the emotion out of making investment decisions. And what is generally seen as good practice is that on an annual basis, let's say that your medium-term or long-term asset allocation is 50-50 bonds and equities, you should be trimming those assets which have outperformed and buying back into those assets which have underperformed. So that brings discipline to your investment process, but also it should keep your asset allocation being aligned with your risk tolerance in the long run. And it really is just as simple as that.
So, Victor, also, I wanted to get your views on risk and how that changes from an investor's perspective as market conditions evolve.
Well, I can actually tie that in with the rebalancing aspect, because essentially the risk piece is, in bubble situations, people tend to anchor on prices that are going up. So they take on more risk because they think prices are going to go up and up into the future. So the rebalancing actually forces people to remove money when you're anchored on prices going up and putting into a safer asset versus the risk of a bear market when prices are going down. Rebalancing is also very helpful because people tend to anchor on negative returns, and they are less likely to put money when they're in a bad mood to take on more risk. So there's the idea with the rebalancing, when the market's going down, it will force people to take money from safer assets to put money into risky assets, and they're essentially buying over the long term lower. So essentially, our emotion and our mood really also impact our willing to take risk in up markets and down markets. A negative mood also affects our risk tolerance or our perception for wanting to take on riskier assets.
And so how does that tie in with anchoring bias, where investors put too much weight on certain events?
Well, as I said, with the anchoring, if you're anchoring in a bubble situation, you're making the conclusion, or you feel like, also combined with representativeness that I mentioned, people are going to draw the conclusion based on those anchoring on those current prices that prices for the next 6 to 12 to 18 months are going to continue to go up. And so the same way when the market's going down, people do the opposite situation. So that's why that rebalancing, and also I think what's also people should think about also is the notion of dollar cost averaging combined with that, where you're putting in a set amount in your retirement account every month, also helps you buy an average price as well.
Yeah, that's right. So I think actually, in a way, one of the biases that people talk about is mental accounting, which is when you deliberately put your assets into different pots. So you have your retirement pot, your holiday pot, etc. But in a way, doing that can help you make longer term asset allocation decisions, which really can be quite helpful. So I think that's an example there of where biases work both ways.
So just finally, Victor, I wanted to get your sort of best piece of advice for an investor in trying to manage the psychological side of it.
I would say for myself, I have 95% of my money in, probably even more than that, 95 to 98% of my money in retirement-based mutual funds. and I have about 1 to 2% of my money in essentially my own individual retirement account, in which I hold maybe 1 or 2 individual stocks, but it only represents 1 to 2% of my overall wealth. And so I do have a propensity to like to trade a little bit. So what I do is I trade a very small piece of my wealth, but also what I've learned when I actually make money on a stock, rather than suffer from that overcommon behavior, even if it's only a small amount of my overall portfolio, I take the gains and I switch the gains that I made on that trade into a mutual fund. And so I'm never letting the small amount of money that I am trading become detrimental to my overall portfolio. And that's probably the greatest thing I've learned since the financial crisis, even for myself.
And Oliver, what about you?
Well, I take a slightly more racy outlook than Victor, I'm afraid. So I only have about 70% of my assets in very sensible managed portfolios, such as IG Smart Portfolios, and about 30 I like to manage myself. And of course, therefore, I fall for all sorts of biases. But you know, try and mitigate them where possible. And I think actually one of probably the most dangerous is confirmation bias, which is where you keep reading information that agrees with your view, but also I think what in America is known as seersucker illusion, which is an over-reliance on expert advice. So if you combine that with CNBC, you may be in trouble.
Well, that's all we've got time for today. Thank you so much to both of my guests, Victor Riccardi and Oliver Smith. I'm Victoria Scholar, and make sure to tune in again next week to IG's Decoding the Markets.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.